6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now? Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson, giving you the story behind the song on Consequence.
Welcome, listeners, to the story behind the song. I'm your host, Peter Chotti of Deep Cuts Media. Well, here's a first. It's my first The Story Behind the Song two-timer, my second interview with the great Nancy Wilson of Heart, one of the most iconic rock and roll supergroups of all time. Back in season 3, I interviewed Nancy about the band's classic song, Crazy on You. We had so much fun the first time that we decided to do it again, and this time it's Barracuda, yet another showcase for her amazing powerhouse guitar licks. Nancy's churning, crunching, blasting, in-your-face riff that kicks it out is the stuff of legend. I bet you can hear and feel it now. Now that's classic music. No AI can generate that. Barracuda roared out of our speakers and shook our bedroom walls in 1977 with Heart's third album, Little Queen. That's nearly 50 years ago, and the great news is that Nancy and her sister Anne are back on the road to melt our faces and touch our hearts after a health scare last year. So take a listen as we dive deep into the story behind Heart's blasting classic track Barracuda with virtuoso guitarist, singer, and songwriter, Nancy Wilson. Nancy, you are my first two-timer on this show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yes.
Not one, but two of me.
Yes. And I enjoyed it so much the first time, as did the audience. Enjoyed it so much the first
Fantastic.
Time. I'm excited to have you on again.
Well, I'm happy to be here. You know me, I could talk about myself for hours, you know?
Well, you have some great stories to tell.
Yeah, you know, there's pretty never ending. I mean, you live long enough, you have even better, more better stories to tell.
You're probably, as we get older, we're more willing to tell them.
Admit to stuff. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
You know, confession. Admit to stuff. You know, what do I have to lose at this point? I could just tell the truth.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Last time we spoke, we were talking about Crazy on You. We were talking about the lyrics and how they stemmed from the times themselves, that it was a reflection of the tumult of the early 70s and the Vietnam War.
Right.
And today we're going to be talking, everybody, about Barracuda, another signature, amazing song, with Nancy slashing the guitar. And that song may be so timely today, but I don't want to jump the gun on it, but we'll talk about that.
Okay.
But Nancy, last time we spoke, which was over a year ago now, which is crazy.
Wow.
And what you were just about to go on tour with your sister. And actually, then I saw you. I was at Jazz Fest of 2024.
Oh.
And
wow.
And I saw your set, and it was incredible. Like, you know, it was really wonderful to see you all in concert. And then I had tickets for December's show here in San Diego.
Yeah.
And of course, the tour wasn't happening then for health reasons.
Yeah.
And so, but the tour is on again, which is wonderful. So tell us a little bit about how your sister is doing.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to report, you know, that she's looking good. She's feeling good. She sounds really good. You know, modern science is a blessing. And, you know, she had some cancer and now she does not. And she went through the chemo and she went through a bunch of the different infusion treatments and all of the stuff and various, you know, amazing technology that they have now. And she's ready to go. It's been not quite a year, but we took the break. She dealt with it. It's like we're ready to get back on that bus. We're going in rehearsals in a few days. I'm rehearsing for the rehearsals now, you know, so, and it's really cool because, you know, we're not spring chickens, you know, but we know what we're doing on a stage. And so.
You know what you're doing. You sounded great at New Orleans.
It's one of the coolest jobs you could ever have. And while we could still do it, you know, we've got to just enjoy every little morsel that we can.
When you are off, let's say you're done touring and, you know, once the tour was called off last time, how do you, your daily life, how does
That's
the music enter your life?
Writing the songs is where I've been since we had anticipated an entire year basically of touring instead of what we expected to be doing. So I got busy with songs and making some new music. You know, in hopes to maybe work on a hard album again. So, you know, I've got a solo career, I've got a career with Heart, but I'm really driven to be creative. I even have dreams and stuff about, here's this melody of a song that, like, I had a dream of Paul McCartney. He came to me in a dream because I was struggling with this verse area in this one song, and he gave me the melody for the verse area. So I woke up and I recorded it into my phone. I went next door to my studio and I tried it out and it completely worked. You know, it was like, wow, it's Paul McCartney's gifting me from another dimension, you know, for this one song me and my friend Sue Ennis are working on for a friend who passed away. So there's a tribute to him that we're making a song for. It's going to be in Seattle in May. We're going to do a Charles R. Cross rock show for him. He's a rock writer who wrote our book and all that stuff. So anyway, long story short, I'm working on music one way or the other, but I don't actually practice playing guitar because for me, it's just like speaking or walking. Or, you know, cooking or exercising. So, you know, if I have an idea, then I approach the guitar with my idea.
So even when it comes to the intricacies of Crazy on You and the opening of that song, that's something that it just comes naturally to you, even if you put down your fingers for months.
Well, you know, I haven't been playing a lot of intricate stuff. I'm kind of more in the songwriting mode, which is more like structure, like chord progressions and melodies against chord progressions and ideas like that. But the intricate stuff comes like later, you know. I think at where you went to the jazz festival, I think that's where I completely blew the intro to Crazy on You. You did not notice that?
I would tell you if I knew,
oh my God,
and I know
just
the intro.
I completely effed it up, and because the strings had been changed to a different gauge. And I was like, oh my God, I can't, this is a whole different action than I was used to playing that Crazy on You intricate thing before Crazy on You. And so I kind of really blew it. And I went, I kind of had to go to the microphone and say, I'm sorry, that was the string's fault. You know, everybody laughed. But at the same time, it was an interesting observation that people were like, wow, it's not pre-recorded. Like, she's actually making a mistake. And like, when things kind of...
That's rock and roll right there. That is rock and roll.
It's kind of a really interesting... People go like, she goofed up and then she kept going. Because that proves that it's really happening on a live stage, live music. And so I was kind of like, well, I guess that's one good thing about making mistakes. You know, you don't have to beat yourself up about it because people like it in a certain crazy way.
Do you find that your lyrics are more compelling to you when you go with your, when you just kind of put it out there rather than think and keep rewriting and rewriting and rewriting?
Yeah, lyrics are tough. You know, like you want to, if you're pissed off at someone, like with Barracuda, you know, like that's how my Barracuda happened. And we're getting there. But, you know, but it's an interesting dynamic when you're trying to express yourself. It's really hard walking the line of being preachy, you know, like, I know what I feel about you and you should go jump up off the pier, you know. And sometimes angry stuff really works, especially in a punk rock context, you know, like railing against the big man or the suits or, you know, big brother, whatever. But I think the most personal way, like you're talking to a friend or writing a love letter to someone personally, that is the most sort of timeless way to approach expressing in a song. And, you know, paint those pictures in your song like, well, I'm sitting at a bar, you know, and I'm, I could be anyone in this bar. I've been everyone in this bar before, you know, and I know all these people because they're all me, you know, that kind of feeling like humanity again. So it's interesting, you know, it's just, it's really elusive, and especially the lyric writing part. I work with Sue Ennis, who's a longtime collaborator with me and my sister for Heart Songs for a long time. And we still work on, we've been working on the Charlie Cross song and called Aftermath. And, you know, we really go round and round about what is said. What are you saying? Because you have to walk this careful tightrope about connotations that, like, or syrupy, sweet, sentimental stuff. You don't want to be too corny, you know, but you don't want to be too preachy. You don't want to be, you want to be really honest, but not simplistic honest. You know, you want to be cool honest. I don't know. It's hard to even, you know, describe, I guess, but it's not the easiest part of creating. It's just the songwriting part is lyrics.
You teased that you're writing some music for you yourself, but also potentially for a Heart album.
Right.
Is there a Heart album that we can expect, you know, in the near future?
Well,
is that the plan?
There's no way to make any announcement about that. Like,
okay.
I went out in the press not before we were going out on the tour last time, and I was like, I was texting with all the band members and Anne and going like, we should do like acoustic, you know, we should do an acoustic album. And everybody got real excited about it. And so I announced it and they're like, wait a minute, we have to go on the road first. You know, we can't do both of those things simultaneously.
Right.
But I think that would be awesome to do an acoustic
album. I think it'd be awesome too. Yeah. So, Nancy, Little Queen was your third album. Dreamboat Annie was 74 or 75, your first album. And so you had already had the smash from the beginning, the first album. And you were, I'm not going to say kids, but going into the studio
we
and all the songs that you had created up to that point in time.
Yeah.
How are you, you and your sister, Anne, how are you different going into the studios on album number three? How is your state of mind different? Did you feel pressure to succeed and to tell me
yeah.
about that?
Well, I think album three, album one was like really nerve-wracking and scary and so exciting to be able to make an album at all.
Yeah.
And that was the big, you know, prize to be able to do that. And then the second album was embroiled with a bunch of legal rigmarole that made it really difficult and impossible. So it came out under duress in a stressful situation, but it was a pretty good album nevertheless.
That was Magazine?
Magazine.
Yeah.
And so the third album was really like our for real second album, and the way it felt to go in the studio with a bunch of these songs that were going to be on Magazine, but had to wait for Little Queen to actually be done in a real recording studio setting. Anyway, it's a long, boring story, but we were so happy, you know, to get into another real, you know, official album making, project with Little Queen. And it's, again, was like another concept, like Dreamboat Annie was kind of a concept where there was a recurring motif and a theme mm-hmm. that came back later and just a little musical, you know, connective tissue throughout the album. And with Little Queen, we thought that would be great too, because we felt that, you know, we're a band of gypsies. We'd been on the road a couple of years already, and, you know, it was a movable feast, you know, and we took our wagons and our horses and our, you know, rent-a-goats and rent-a-wagons. And so, you know, we rented the Elysian Park area with rented goats and a gypsy wagon and a bunch of costumery and archers and stuff. We were, you know, writing about our gypsy era. And it was a really cool time in the band. We were really extremely inspired with mandolins and stuff, because, you know, we've been influenced from the beginning by Led Zeppelin really a lot, and the mm-hmm. Beatles and a lot of other influences. But because we were doing Battle of Evermore and I was getting into the mandolin, so we had a whole mandolin section of the album that was really cool. And we were, you know, gypsies and, you know, white witches and all that stuff. So that album was really, really fun to make. And we were back in Seattle in our hometown while we made it. So we were at home for the most part of making that album. And with Barracuda, it was, you know, a song that came together when we'd been out in the busy world of becoming really popular and getting gold records and stuff like that. So it was like a whole new world for us to kind of inhabit the rock star pose, you know.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of schmoozers and people like hangers-on and people transactional friendships, people coming out of the woodwork. Oh, I always loved you guys, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, who are you? You know, I was there first. Well, I don't remember you, but okay. And, you know, stuff like that. So that was kind of what spurred Barracuda in, you know, like poked it into life, was that we were at some party, release party, I think, or something. And the guys in the satin jackets were all schmoozing and taking their cocaine. And we were not doing that then, but we did that later. But yeah, speaking of honesty.
See, this is where the stories come out. Yeah,
yeah, right. So, but I mean, we were just pretty innocent, you know, really, for early 20s and we were just getting started and we had the tiger by the tail and people were really like heavy schmoozing and trying to get all the most salacious details into the press about us that they could come up with. And that's where that happened was this guy said, "Hey, so Anne, you know, how's your lover? How's," and Anne goes, "Michael, he's right over there, you know. He's great. Why?" He goes, "No, I mean your sister lover. Yeah, you know." And so it was like the innuendo was really, it just wasn't true. So, I mean, it would have been fine if it was true, if we were together as a couple, but we weren't. We both had boyfriends, and it just wasn't our, you know, way of sexuality then. So, anyway, so.
What a strange comment for that person to.
You know, like, yeah, bizarre. Like, because we had our first album had two of us, like, looking with, touching bare shoulders, looking at the lens, yeah. I guess. I don't know.
They're sisters.
That
you know,
would be, like, pretty tame for sisters, these days, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah. Sisters hug each other. It's okay.
Right, yeah.
You know.
But with bare shoulders, I don't know. And so she was, like, really pissed off about it. And so she kind of left. She turned on her boot heel and she, you know, stormed away from the room and went up to the hotel room and just, you know, wrote the words to Barracuda in their entirety.
And, that's amazing.
She's really good at with lyrics. And so then, you know, not long after that, when we were sound checking with Rog and Roger Fisher and Mike DeRozier and Steve Fawson and all those guys that were the lineup at the early first lineup of the band, Roger had a really cool riff, like a vibey riff that was very much was the Barracuda riff. So, and at the time on the radio, there was a really cool, similar kind of a riff by Nazareth where they were covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It was like, it had the same groove. And, but I think Barracuda kind of, you know, blew it out of the water. It's just one of the more iconic, and the sound of the guitar is so analog. It's so good. Anyway, so it came together pretty quickly and I kind of had I was able to get the bridge idea kind of locked in there and, you know, it all just came together pretty fast. But that signature riff is one of the it's the iconography of rock. It's in the pantheon, I guess you'd say.
It is.
It really
that
is.
Riff is absolutely in the pantheon.
It's so good. It's a just, and when we were doing that, we were making that album, we had a deadline. We had to, you know, all stay at the studio. And there was no digital technology going on then. Actually, it was right before that. And so the faders were not, there was no automation on the actual channels of the faders on the board itself. So when you would lay the song onto the 2-inch tape, when you're making your mix from the master onto the tape, the final mix had to be live. You had to perform the mix live to tape after you played it and all the parts were down and you've decided which take was the take. So in its entirety, it was done all the way through with everybody playing at the same time.
Wow.
If you can imagine, if there was one half of the song that we loved more than the other, we would take a physical tape and splice it with a razor blade and, you know, do the splice it together thing with the actual master tape, the physical tape.
It's amazing.
And then you'd lay it over to the mixtape. So anyway, it was really hands-on. And so at the end of Barracuda, everyone was standing at the console during the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- end, we wanted it to peg all of the VU meters. Like, it should start the level of the track, but for the very end, the last five bars or whatever it is, seven or five bars, an uneven amount on purpose. Everybody pushed all the faders, the master faders and all the parts, all the faders. We wanted to blow the board up, you know? So we just wanted to peg the meters and have everything just go off the chart loud. And then it stops on, you know, an abrupt stop at the very end. So you could feel that, like, even after it was mastered in the master lab, you know, the volume stayed relatively in control compared to the rest of the song, unlike what we wanted it to do. But you know, there are standards in radio airplay and stuff like that that had to be followed. And there, all the compressors that kind of come onto it later when the airplay of it all. So anyways, a lot of tech talk.
Yeah, you know? You're trying to break it, but when you have several people and you're relying upon each other because you have to get it right together, that itself for a non-musician seems like it would be a pressure, almost like some pressure to do it. And it's like, damn, I fucked up on this. And, you know, so, and then the other people in the band go, oh, are you kidding me? We had a great take going. But do you somehow, in a way, Nancy, do you miss some of that from those times?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not sort of a memory lane kind of, you know, oh, I wish it was the way it used to be.
Yeah.
Because there's so many great things about technology now that are so convenient. It's not quite so much skin in the game, you know, but which is sometimes good, sometimes not. You know, I guess what I miss is the analog sound. Like,
yeah,
when you hear tube microphones onto physical tape, recorded onto physical tape, especially with acoustic instruments and vocals, you really can feel and hear that. And what we've all listened to our phones so much these, you know, since technology went so digital and cell phones are miraculous, you know, they're miracle inventions because we could carry our little offices around and we can make songs happen and we can do all kinds of stuff. But the actual effort of getting something to onto physical tape through mirrors and magnets, basically, you know, it's really, there's a beautiful thickness about it. When you listen to like early Elvis Presley recordings, you can hear the tubes in the microphones and you can hear the walls in the rooms, the wooden wall in the room, you know, and the amplifiers kind of crackling, you know, with the amps and the tubes and everything going on in the sound. That's what Barracuda has going for it, too. The guitar sound, it's so tubular, man, you know. It's tubular.
Yeah. Well, so it's, you know, just on that point, it's more akin to being in a bar or a venue listening to Heart.
It's a live in the room feeling. Yeah, it totally is, you know. You know, it's like you're there. It's not an arm's length removed by a bunch of digital, you know, zeros and ones in between you and your ears, right. You know.
You know, yeah, so it's a couple things then. So with Barracuda, it was the lyrics that came first, and they were inspired by that, that insane guy,
the slime
who said
ball.
These things. And when we first spoke about Crazy on You, and you were telling me that we were discussing the fact that what's old is new again, you know, which so back then we had the tumult that was going on with Vietnam and all the unrest and dissension internally and how Crazy on You kind of fits with the times again.
Yeah.
And it's and then, you know, Barracuda, which, by the way, what an interesting thing for Anne to come up with, because it so encapsulates what the way you describe this guy. And so for, but it's not an obvious word, you know, Barracuda is not an obvious word. So it's interesting.
It's a different way of saying, you know, he's a shark, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's another way to say shark, really, you know, and, but like an ugly fish with big teeth, that's just gonna, you know, a bottom feeder kind of idea, you know?
So do you think there's any resonance to these times with that?
Oh, completely. I mean, you know, there's as long as I've been around, which is getting, you know, getting up there. And it's interesting how things do change for the better. And there's a lot more change takes forever, but change happens gradually. It takes longer than you want it to take. You know, like with a song like Barracuda, it's sort of railing against male chauvinism, obviously, in the culture. And the era that we came out of, it was a lot more problematic that way for women, you know, to be taken seriously and to be to gain the respect in the boys' club of being, you know, confident leaders inside a rock band. So it's but then, you know, just in our time since then, it's been, well, there's the Me Too movement, you know, that came out and a whole bunch of guys got trashed by a whole bunch of women that finally told their stories. And that was really a good, important thing culturally to see happen. Although I think it actually backfired and they overcorrected. Just like any bandwagon, it kind of goes too far. And then a bunch of really cool guys got sort of trashed unnecessarily. And, you know, it's just like the bandwagon effect usually goes further than in a culture that necessarily needs to go. And all of the sensationalism of everything gets to be more important than the actual meat and potatoes of what's happening in our world. So, you know, the showboat, sensational, technologically advanced publicity machine has become really in control of a lot of our perception, which is really, that's, you know, doesn't help us as people in the world at all. It's really something to be really careful with. Information gets really distorted now, and it's advertised, and it appears, and now AI is going to make it even harder to figure out what's real, what's really happening, what you're really seeing, what you really want to believe or not believe. But I think culturally, you know, the constant thing is creative, artistic expression that connects honestly. It's an honest connection between human to human, which is a lifesaver in our times.
Yeah, for sure.
The song
for
can
sure.
talk and tell you the truth, you know, probably not the news.
Well, certainly in these, you know, let's face it, these times with it where there's so much division, Barracudas are being, in my view, are being elevated at this point. And this is where, again,
the boys club is back with a vengeance.
We need Nancy and Ann Wilson to come back and kind of bring back some. We need more Barracuda songs.
We need more Baby Lestrange. We need more Primo Dennis. We need more Little Queens out there. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, we're going to do our darndest.
Yeah, for sure. And so once, and then just to end the note on your third album and with Barracuda, you had already become, and you were still, like you said, you were young 20s when you were at this point, which is incredible. You're on album number 3 and you're still in your early 20s. So did Little Queen change the trajectory even more of where you were before going into the studio? Did it change your life even more?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it kind of stylistically, you know, morphed a lot of girl fans started dressing mm-hmm. like little queens, and a lot mm-hmm. of lace gloves, and, you know, yeah. The fashion of it is the fun part, you know, it was the fashion part. And, I think it just kind of gives you, it sort of gives you permission to be different for men and women, you know. If you love music and you take it, you wear the clothes like it, and you're kind of part of the clan, and you become a gypsy, you know, in your own way of thinking, against the grain, against what, you know, you're told to believe, or what, you know, you're a little bit left of center or off center somehow, or right of center, whichever. But anyway, I just think it's cool the way rock music, you know, the lifespan of any rock band is about 5 to 8 years. And we've survived a couple of different lifespans, because like the Little Queen and Dog and Butterfly era, from Dream Mode Annie to after Dog and Butterfly, that was kind of the first lifespan of the band. And like, you see a band like U2, about 5 years, they're like the coolest thing on the planet. Then everybody's like, oh, they're not so cool anymore. But then like a couple of years, they go by, and then they're back, and they did amazing. It's a Beautiful Day, and they did all this other amazing stuff, and they're back. And they, you know, there's lifespans that are attached. If you have any kind of longevity, if you're lucky to have any longevity, you adapt, and the art itself mutates towards to what the culture needs, you know. So, because the culture is hungry, you know, for information and for fashion and for, you know, just gratification, you know, of the way music sounds and the way art looks and the way it feels and all the things that art gives us. So, you know, we all go through our phases with it and lifespans of it. And that's one of the greatest things about it. It's always changing, and we're always growing with it, learning with it, and changing with it. So nothing stays the same.
So everybody, this was the great, it's the great Nancy Wilson for round two on The Story Behind the Song. And Nancy really, really enjoyed it as always.
Always
and
you're delightful. Talking to you. Thanks for putting me on again.
It will be fun to see you when you come around again, Southern California. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're heading your way.
That was Nancy Wilson of the great band Heart sharing her story behind their crunching classic song Barracuda from their third album, Little Queen. I'm your host, Peter Chatti of Deep Cuts Media. You can find me at deepcutsmedia.com. If you like The Story Behind the Song, please rate my podcast, follow it, and share it with your friends, family, and other music fans like you. New and classic episodes come to you every Monday morning. And make sure you're following the Consequence Podcast Network to keep up to date with all our series at consequence.net/consequence-podcast-network. And as always, thanks for listening to The Story Behind the Song.
Ugh. Spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts. Appointments. Online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom. Blocked. No more interruptions. No more stress. Stay connected. Stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.